Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Let's Go Eat Show. Hi, hey, 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 how are you? Hi, this is Bill Allred, and you want to hear a couple of guys with a, well, a couple of guys arguing a lot. In a good way, but we're arguing. That's what you'll hear on this episode of the show with my guest, Dave Owen. He's a political consultant. He's a conservative. I am not a conservative. I've known him for a long time, and we are able to sit and argue about policies and things and still like each other. And as Dave says at some point, I think toward the end of the interview, that's a lost art. People can argue and still like each other and get along. The producer of the Let's Go Eat Show podcast, Dylan Allred, also throws in a few succinct and pointed questions in the interview. I hope you enjoy it. So, one other thing. If you listen to the Let's Go Eat Show podcast and you like it, please let those mechanisms where you can rate it and all of that, right?
Right, that's right.
Okay.
And share it with your friends. Go on Facebook. Yeah. Tell them about it. Yeah. It would help us out.
Yeah, thanks, there Dylan. Do all of that. Okay, without further ado, here is Dave Owen, political consultant on the Let's Go Eat Show. You know, you're an observer of the political scene, and you've worked on political campaigns here and elsewhere, and marketing campaigns in politics in Canada. So, you know, in a broad sense, what's going on? And
I told Chaffetz I'll be able to use all the good lines that I give him that he doesn't use.
Yeah, you should do that. It's
Got to get real close to the mic. They're not very good. And you can, move it closer to you if you want. I was on a plane with Chaffetz last week coming back from New York.
Did you chat with him?
I did not. I tried to think of something.
He took a picture of him in the
I took
terminal.
A
sneaky picture.
Sneaky picture of him.
Al Franken kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was asleep when Dylan put his hands on his boobs.
There was a moment when I was coming back from the bathroom. And it was an late night flight, mm-hmm. and he was asleep, and I kind of thought, mm-hmm. no, I don't know.
All right. So are we rolling?
Yeah.
So we're talking with our...
Do you edit this?
No. God, no. As a matter of fact, what we just said will be on the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah. So just watch your mouth. No, you can swear because it's a podcast.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So if you want to swear, you can. But no editing. So if you slip up and reveal some deep, dark political secret that nobody's supposed to know.
You have the video of Donald Trump in Russia.
I just burn the place down.
Something
tonight.
Like that.
Dave Owen is our guest on the Let's Go Eat show. And Dave is a... Is it fair to call you, is that what we call you, a political consultant?
Yeah,
yeah,
I am.
You consult on political races, political campaigns, a lot here in Utah, but you do it elsewhere as well, right?
I have.
Yeah, and what's you have a firm, it's Owen...
Owen Communications.
Owen Communications.
LLC.
And so being a political consultant means you play a lot of golf.
This is true.
I mean, really.
Until I hurt my back.
Yeah.
About 2 months ago.
Did that hurt your business to not be able to go out? I guess there are other ways.
It hurt my attitude.
There are other ways to deal with politics.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you care to say some of the campaigns you've worked on?
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, some of them have been open. I'll go back to the beginning.
Okay.
I began because I got upset about the public funding of the Olympics.
This is where you began
back in 1989.
Consulting work. What were you doing? What were you doing before then, Dave?
I was in the trade show business for over 10 years.
Really?
The kind of the custom booth area.
Setting up booths for people and stuff.
Well,
like
we
that.
Designed and built them, and then went to various shows and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I think I did know that. And you told me about that once, and you sold the company, I think, for a...
Well, no.
No?
I actually just kind of phased out of it. But what happened is that for about 10 years, I did politics, sometimes paid, but it was more of an avocation. Mm-hmm. There's a great story about that I will not tell you on this podcast, but it's going to go in my book someday. And I did it for about 10 years, and then in 99... transitioned and went to work for the Summit Group, which is an advertising PR firm here in Salt Lake, and was there for 5 years. And, you know, they showed me the door.
Thanks, Dave, but, we've had enough of your attitude.
It wasn't quite that, but since then I've been on my own as Owen Communications.
Now, can you describe to people
so
what you
do? Let me go
do?
Back. Yeah. So in 89, I worked on this thing, and you know Steve Pace probably and some others. We had this little group called Utahns for Responsible Public Spending. We were right.
It's because of the Olympics.
The public subsidy. I didn't have anything against the Olympics. I had a problem with tax dollars going to the Olympics, and as it turned out – okay, here I'll name drop for you because this will lead to some of other things that I do. One day, I was actually consulted with Nordstrom when they were trying to move over to the Gateway.
Yeah.
And one day I was walking with Blake Nordstrom. There's a name drop for you. Mm-hmm. And he said, "So, Dave, what'd you think of the Olympics?" And I said, "Well, Blake, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask." And he said, "Why is that?" And I said, "Well, because I started in politics by opposing public funding at the Olympics." Mm-hmm. He was very interesting, such an engaging guy, truly a remarkable person. And he said, "Well, tell me more about that. What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, I go, let me give you an example. According to their own numbers, the Salt Lake Organizing Committee sold 1 million tickets to the Salt Lake Winter Olympic Games. The federal subsidy to the Games was in excess of $800 million.
Now, does that include the rebuild of I-15, the tracks, lines, all of that?
Exclusive of transportation.
Okay.
And I said, so in other words, the U.S. taxpayer subsidized every single Olympic ticket to the tune of $800. And I said, we don't do that for the Super Bowl. You know, we don't do that for the NBA All-Star Game. Mm-hmm. And I said, I just simply – and he laughed and he said, well, he goes, to tell you the truth – I like a good public subsidy as much as the next guy, which if you know how Nordstrom does so well with that kind of thing. Actually, it's the developers, not them. Mm-hmm. But he said, I can see your point. So that kind of summarizes what my issue was with all of that.
Just to be clear about this, though, it should be no surprise that that's what happens. That happens with every Olympic Games, does it not?
Oh, it does. Yeah. I mean, and it's gotten to the point where they almost can't give them away. So, of course, Salt Lake City's getting in line to take them again.
Yeah.
But anyway, so from there in 1992, I knew this guy named Mike Leavitt from my neighborhood.
I've heard of him.
I kind of knew him, and I found out that guy was running for governor. Mm-hmm. And I went to him, and I said, you know, I'd really like – because I could do this politics thing, and I like doing it. And I'd been involved in a lot of stuff just as a citizen activist, watchdog, you know, that kind of thing for about 3 years. And I won't go through the whole story. It was really funny. He said what all politicians do. Yeah, that'll be great. And then I didn't hear anything from him. And so one day I stopped by his insurance office, which is down by the – where whatever the ballpark's called now, Smith's, I think. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, Mike, I'm going to go help somebody else. You know, I want to – and we had this conversation. He goes, Dave, I just don't think – I think you're more conservative than I am. And I said,
is that true?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh. And true to this day.
Yeah, but Mike Leavitt was kind of a liberal for Utah governor.
Moderate. I wouldn't say liberal. But anyway, he's not particularly ideological on conservative principles. Mm. And I think he would say that. I don't mean it as an insult. Mm. And I said at the time, Mike, you're running for governor. I'm not. Mm. I like you. And I trust you. I think highly of you. And so I really want to see a gubernatorial campaign. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, even though it was unpaid at the time, I got access to things that I would have never had access to. And it ended up being inner circle on that campaign, privy to the conversations between a great consultant named Eddie Mai and the late Chuck Sellier, who was a filmmaker who became involved because he really liked Mike also, and Bud Scruggs, who's still around, and of course Dan Jones, and LeVar Webb, who was the campaign manager. And so I always say that I kind of got my master's degree in 1992.
So that gives you your start. How do clients come to you, or do you do?
They do now.
They do now.
Yeah.
But you had to go like you did with Mike Leavitt, kind of say, hey,
Inserted myself. Yeah. And then in 1994, there was this woman running for Congress named Enid Waldholz. Mm-hmm. And I was observing that race. Another long story, and I'll try to cut to the chase. My narrative style is not conducive to this format.
It really is.
It's about sitting around talking for as long as you want.
Yeah, but I'm being really short. But anyway, so I had observed this campaign, and one day I went down and talked with her campaign manager for some reason. I just kind of wanted to know what was going on, and he showed me the campaign and told me why they were going to win. And I said, well, you're not. You know, you're down 10 points in a three-way race. If you recall, Merrill Cook was in that race, and he was self-financed at the time. And I said, you know, you're in trouble right now. And finally, after about 2 hours, this guy kind of – his defenses were down. And he said, okay, well, what would you do? And I said, well, whoever's doing your ads is killing you. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, that's the firm. It's one of the best in the country. They're recommended by the NRCC, and thus began my war with the NRCC, which has lasted to this day.
The National Republican Congressional Committee.
And I said, I don't care who they are. And I don't care who recommended them. They're killing you. And the reason was every single one of those ads, and most of your listeners may not be old enough to remember this, but it was Enid on camera, and all I could hear was, I'm the smarter than you. I'm the smartest person here. I'm so smart, I just can't even believe how smart I am. I'm way smarter than
and
you.
And she is.
And she is. She is very, very smart. But you don't put that in commercials. She didn't literally do that, but that was the message. And this guy, Dave Harmer, said, well, what do we do? And I said, there's only one outside consultant in the world who understands Utah, and that's Eddie Mai, who's just this little man who I've always described him as looking like a bad junior high principal. And I'm a guy, I'm a bright guy. I value intelligence in others, which is why I've always liked you, Bill.
Oh, Dave, how's that? Thanks so much.
Is there a stinger for that?
That was great.
Honestly, Eddie is top five in my lifetime of people that I've known that are just incredible minds. And you wouldn't pick them out of a police lineup, not in a million years. And so as chance would have it, the NRCC the next day was sponsoring a bridge line that you could call in at various hours of the day, and some high-dollar political consultant would be on the other end of the line, and campaigns all over the country could ask them questions. What do we do about this?
Our campaign isn't going so well, so what do we do?
Yeah, we need some help with blah, blah, blah. Well, the two guys from Enid's campaign ring on, and guess who the consultant is? Eddie Mai.
Eddie Mai.
So they immediately realize that I'm right about this guy. As it happened, he was coming that weekend to meet with Governor Leavitt on some issues that he was working on outside the governor's office. And we put a meeting together, and of course the rest is history. And you know all the – so I had a front row. I have a friend. Did you ever do a show with Spencer Stokes?
Well, I was just going to mention Spencer Stokes. Yes, we did. What a just a giant of a intellect he has, and he's really
and
great.
What a delight.
Yes. He's absolutely charming.
It was so sad the 2 years that he was in Washington, D.C., because the legislative session up here was so much more boring without the presence of Spencer Stokes, who always has eight different things going. Well, he's introduced me before as, this is Dave Owen. He's never been further than 8 feet from any major political scandal in the state of Utah, which sadly is kind of true when I look back through my career. But anyway, I won't go through the whole thing with Enid. We spent $2 million illegal dollars. As it turned out.
That was her husband's fault.
Embezzlement and so forth. And,
oh, that's right. And he was taking money from his family.
I had the experience of being interviewed in my office for 3.5 hours by the FBI.
Really?
Which has left me to this day amazed that people lie to them. I would have confessed to anything.
They're very thorough.
And they were very nice. And luckily, everything that I had done from the time we engaged was with 5 weeks to go, Enid's down 10 in a three-way race. Election day, she wins by 10, which was a huge turnaround.
That was interesting, too. And I wondered how anybody didn't anybody ever say to her, you know, this guy that's your husband? I mean, because even if you didn't know what was happening, the embezzling of the money from his own family, he was just creepy.
Yeah, well, and people did. And I know Enid. She's a dear friend to this day. I know you know her and like her.
She's very sweet.
And
very nice.
And unfortunately, love is blind. I mean, people do stupid stuff.
She probably would say to herself, I don't know how that happened.
She did. Yeah. And then my conclusion, I'll never forget, is the conclusion of my interview with the FBI. The guy says, so, Dave, he gives me the catch-all question. Can you think of anything that you know in which the Congresswoman's statements publicly have varied from what you know to be the truth? Uh-huh. And I looked at the agents and I said, if you want to talk woulda, coulda, and shoulda, she's guilty as hell. And they said, nope, just the facts.
Just what she said.
We're interested in the facts.
Yeah.
And I said, then I know nothing that would indicate that she was in on it.
I think it's interesting. That's fascinating to me that they're so square. And they are. They're just that. You know, we don't want rumor.
A pinuendo.
Yeah.
They weren't looking for that. I had documentation of all the people that Chuck and I brought Chuck Selye and Eddie Mai into that campaign. Mm-hmm. And we had done the ads and we had everything substantiated that it was paid from the campaign and that no donations had been made, you know, off the books or anything like that.
So when did you start getting really paid for
doing
this?
Well, I got paid for that.
Okay.
And then in 1995, I ran Rich McKeon.
Mm-hmm. Very nice guy.
We ran. I shouldn't say it was just me, though I was the motive force there. Mm-hmm. Ran him for mayor against Dee Dee Corradini. Mm-hmm. Had the election been held on Halloween, we would have won. These are very big learning experience, or as they say at the Nordstrom organization, these were big learnings.
So you were up in the polls at Halloween?
Not the polls. It was. Yeah, it wasn't so much the polls. It was the feel. We knew where. I could tell where we were. Mm-hmm. That last week, Dee Dee, absolutely. I don't know. Kathy Beely.
I know the name.
Okay, with City Weekly. She's as active now as she was. But at that time, she interviewed me one time about Dee Dee. And I now do media training for people, and one of the things I say is the mic is always open.
Yep.
You don't ever say anything that you don't want in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. I said to Kathy Beely in what I thought was an off-the-record conversation, she has brass ovaries.
Brass ovaries.
Dee Dee had brass ovaries.
Well, yeah. Because that's a take on, I mean, you got balls made out of brass.
It appeared in the City Weekly. That was, one of my many low points.
So do you think that
quite
that
tasteless.
Was that? Yeah, it was tasteless. Do you consider that as giving her a boost in the?
No. That was years later. No,
oh,
I'm
I
crediting
see.
Dee Dee. I'm crediting Dee Dee for she was ill. 2 weeks to go, and I mean, she sucked it up and went to a gear that nobody knew she had. In fairness, I will say that a whole bunch of power brokers in the community dumped money. We got outspent 3-1,
mm-hmm.
and most of it was down that final stretch, she turned the thing.
So money in political campaigns. Does it most of the time make the difference, some of the time make the difference, or always make the difference?
Oh, some of the time. You know, I mean, it's always necessary. You always have to have money to be able to run.
Yeah.
But it's not always the defining. Now the statisticians, pollsters will tell you that 80% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. But they're probably an incumbent. There are probably other reasons. That's probably
sure.
not causal. It's probably relational.
Mm-hmm.
And but here's what I think after many, many years in this business. I participated in I got a call, just before the ballots dropped in a municipal race this year,
mm-hmm.
and somebody who wanted to participate. And so I got a bunch of money from them and went and participated, and we turned that election. We couldn't have done that. And no, I won't. This one I won't.
Okay,
talk
you won't
about,
say who
but,
we're,
but,
yeah.
But this one we did that because I was able to divine very quickly that it was a very close race. If it had been a 20-point raise, we couldn't have done it.
But if it was, it was close enough, if you had some money to shoot at it,
yes,
to pour into it,
yeah,
you could
we
win.
Were able money at the margin. I call it money at the margin. And nowadays, campaigns are changing radically, and the two big things are social media, which you're well aware of.
Yep.
And secondly, is the mail-in ballot.
Yeah.
That has changed the dynamic of campaigns. I mean, I can't
You. I think people don't really even still know how to. People in politics are still not are still wrestling with how to deal with the mail-in ballot
and, well, and
where
the,
to put your money and your effort at what time because
and because of Obama in 2012, the Democrats have been ahead of the Republicans on that curve. Of actually understanding how to deal with mail-in ballots, the fact that you really can. You know, Obama 2012, there's an article that I encourage anybody who practices politics at any level to read. And it was in The Atlantic. It was I can't remember the author's name, though I know it. And it's an article called When the Nerds Go Marching In. And it was in the Atlantic after the election.
Yeah, I think you had recommended it to me.
I think
I read
did.
It, yeah.
It was the story of the data operation for Obama 2012.
Alexis Madrigal.
Right? Yeah, yeah, Madrigal.
For the Atlantic.
That's right.
Madrigal.
Yeah. That's right. And an excellent article. Number one, incredibly well written, I thought. Very engaging all the way through. But then it's an interest. It's a topic of interest to me. But it was still, I thought, very well done. And the story of the Obama data operation. In 2008, they had already done things that nobody had even thought of before. In 2012, they took that geometric. And it was an incredible, incredible operation.
How they figure out how the, it's almost, it's math. Doing metrics and how to when to do what.
Moneyball.
Yeah.
And the other reason they were smarter than the Republicans is, because I've watched this for years in D.C. with my good friends at the NRCC, most Republican firms in the political industrial complex back in, you know, the Beltway, they would say, oh, yeah, we've got a guy who does social media. Well, it was some 23-year-old who was on Facebook.
And maybe an even unpaid, you know.
They would say, "Oh yeah, we can do that."
Oh, you mean like that guy that Trump has? He was just doing social media for us and going to Russia and stuff like that.
Oh, good grief! Yeah.
What's that guy's name?
That was amazing on 60 Minutes. Yeah, that was a very, very good piece.
Now, we just hired him to do social media. Well, what's he doing in Russia?
But see, that's what the Obama people did. That was so smart. The Republicans were busy using their same guys, same people. Here, go do social media. The head of the data operation, and this was something that really stood out to me in that article in 2012, and I don't remember the guy's name, is he looked at 2012 as they went into that cycle and they said, what we did last time is not enough. And I'm not good enough. I don't know enough.
Really?
So he actually went out and got, and I don't remember the guy. It's been long enough since I've read this. You know the guy, the featured performer in the article. The data guy.
Yeah, I can't.
And then he went and recruited all these guys out of Seattle and Silicon Valley and the
Harper Reed, Dylan Richard.
Harper Reed. Yeah. Harper Reed. It was Harper Reed. And they went and got him. And this guy, and this is something you just don't see in politics. This guy with the Obama campaign who had won in 2008 says, I don't know how to take us to this next level.
So this is now developed beyond my abilities.
I'm going to bring somebody else in who may outshine me, and that's okay. And you just don't see that in politics. People are so protective of their turf.
Yeah, Dylan.
You're talking about mail-in ballots. Isn't that almost obsolete? I mean, at some point soon it's going to be you log on to your state portal you just vote from your phone.
Computer or your phone.
I think you should text a number.
Yeah.
I think you should text a message to...
Yeah. Well, Abe did it. Works for American Idol.
Works for American Idol.
Why not?
Something like that will develop, I would assume.
Yeah, they will. There's a lot of resistance to it. And part of it is this last election. I mean, a lot of talk about hacking, which, by the way, I don't buy. But, you know, the security. And then you have, who is it, Equifax? That, you know, loses 300 million names or something like that.
Okay, let's talk about the fact that you don't buy that there was hacking in the election.
Define hacking.
You keep saying, well, meddling around, trying to stir things up is what
I
would say.
No, that's not what he means.
This
means breaking into somebody's server through a back
door. Well, they have done that. They broke into Hillary Clinton's stuff.
I don't believe they did.
Well, then where did all those emails come
I believe
from?
It
what
was
about the emails, Dave?
I honestly believe that
she turned them over.
That the DNC was not hacked. Number one, Podesta was phished. He wasn't hacked. Okay, so that's part of it. The other part of it is we now know from Donna Brazile what was going on behind the scenes at the DNC.
Yeah, that was kind of
I
weird.
Believe there was a disgruntled Bernie supporter.
Who gave him away.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right, but anyway, let's talk about the you say that you don't believe. How about the Russian meddling? That's what
of course they
when
did.
When you said that,
but this,
that's what I'm talking
but
about.
There was actually a good, and I'll email it to you. There was actually a good piece, I believe, in The New Yorker the other day that somebody sent me. And it was somebody who's not on my side of things politically who said, can we please get over this? This is ridiculous. Most of those ads on Facebook ran after the election, went through a whole bunch of things and talked about how it's much ado about nothing.
But did
Putin want to meddle? Yeah, he did.
It's not that he thinks he can. He doesn't even care who he sways the vote for.
Exactly.
He just wants to stir shit up.
That's the problem.
That's what it is.
Nobody got. He was just.
He just likes to stir
shit up.
He was
doing donuts on the lawn.
And when he stirs. And when he stirs stuff up, that has an effect on the election.
Well,
curse. They say the same thing happened with the Brexit vote.
We can curse?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was it, Segretti or whoever it was in Watergate? They referred to it as rat fucking.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Putin was doing.
Mm-hmm.
If he got Trump, great. If he got Hillary, let's weaken her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's just cause trouble. And I believe that. That's fine.
I think what is interesting about this whole thing is how gullible the Trump people have been. Because Putin stirs the shit up, and they go along with it. They fall into these traps that he sets. They say, Jared Kushner takes meetings with these people.
The thing, Bill. I have a different perspective on that. This Papadopoulos or whatever is Snuffleupagus. He was okay. There, even around the campaigns that I've been on, and I've never been on a presidential, which is orders of magnitude bigger. But even a governor's race or a congressional race, there are all these people who come. Now, what they're really doing is cruising for a job after the election. But they're kind of hangers-on. They're kind of peripheral. You don't really pay attention to them. Papadopoulos must have had some kind of a degree in something or he'd worked somewhere. And so they go, let's stick him in foreign policy. I can promise you he was not integral to anything. And furthermore, he was one of 100 just like him.
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem. But they allow him to go to Russia.
No, he never went to Russia.
I think it was the Papadopoulos who
did. He said, I can set up meetings. And Sessions shouted him down in that meeting. He said, no,
we're not going to do that. But, Dave, here's the problem with this whole Trump organization. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. They don't know.
I at the core, Bill, did you watch The Circus on the Showtime?
No.
It was actually a pretty good show. I didn't watch it every week. But election night I still have on my DVR because anytime I'm down, I can just go back and watch all those people at the Javits Center in New York as they figured out that. And I will tell you that Spencer Stokes and I were the two people in Rich McKeon's life who said, watch out. Watch out.
Well, no, I'll tell you.
I may win this thing.
I interviewed Spencer Stokes just before the election for this podcast. And we were talking about what was going on. And he said everything would indicate, and I'm pretty sure Hillary Clinton will be the president. It was a month out or something.
Yeah.
He said, "No, I'm pretty sure that's going to be the case. She will be the next president of the United States." It really is amazing that it didn't happen.
But let me tell you this: I was watching it because I'm a junkie, and I was watching the RCP, real clip. Clear Politics Average and watching every single day. And when people would ask me, and they do because I'm involved in politics, I had friends of mine who are much more simpatico with you than they are with me politically say, he can't win. I had a guy leave my house and call me from the road.
I think I called you, didn't I?
And he can't. Did you? You may have.
I think probably. I did.
I sure. think I gave you sure. the same speech I gave everybody.
I think I called you and said, Dave, this is not looking good. Can he actually win this? And you said, yep.
Yeah, he can. Mm-hmm. And the reason was I'm looking at the data. Number one, media polls are meaningless. They don't mean anything. Trust me on this. From now on, if you didn't know this in the last election, mm-hmm. know it in the next one. They don't mean anything mm-hmm. because you can't. They always oversample Democrats. They do one out of seven surveys, if they're doing a true random sample, come out of California. Mm-hmm. Well, we know where California's going. And again, it's an electoral college race. It's not a popular vote race.
Should that change?
No, but that's another issue.
That's another
Let me
story.
Keep going okay. here. So I'm looking at the data, and the two that I was watching closest was Investors Business Daily, who has had the best track in the last five presidential elections, who showed the thing even Hillary up two, Trump up one, mm-hmm. even. So in other words, you could go out and do a random sample. And the other one was the L.A. Times, who was doing a very unorthodox methodology, mm-hmm. which I was fascinated by. And I wanted to see how well it did. And they had Trump up most of the
right.
time. And they were absolutely laughed to scorn mm-hmm. because how in the world can you say that? Look at all these other polls. Well, they were, number one, tracking polls. They weren't snapshots done over a period of two nights, you know, once every 2 weeks. These were tracking polls. And L.A. Times had chosen a pool of, I think, 100,000 voters. And then they would randomly sample within them. And their only question was, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to vote for Donald Trump? Mm-hmm. On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to vote for Hillary Clinton? And that was their metric. And they were showing Trump up about 3. So, again, both those polls were telling me that you could do a survey in which Trump was.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Within the margin of error.
Sure.
And then I'm looking at everybody else at 12, 14, all this yep. kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. what I knew was that wasn't true. Mm-hmm. What they're telling you is not true. I don't know what – and people – and you probably asked me, and I said, here's the thing. If what Trump needs to have happen is happening, you're not going to know it till election day because you can't pick it up in conventional data. Mm-hmm. And the reason is I just did some – I hate to call it polling. It's more fun canvassing. Mm-hmm. But you build your list these days. I've done polls since then. And you build your lists out of voter lists now because we have so much data. Mm-hmm. I know it. I can go look and find out exactly – how many times you've voted in the last 10 years and which elections. So I screen everybody else out.
Why is that public information?
It just is.
Well, let's stop that.
Well, no, it doesn't tell me what your vote was.
Yeah. Just tells.
Although I can make certain assumptions by looking at your precinct, mm-hmm. and I can bet on yeah. how you voted.
Yeah.
And so that's where you build your samples.
Derek Kitchen is my counsel.
And if that's where you were building your sample, mm-hmm. then you were missing the people that were going to swing this thing for Trump.
I'm curious as to your opinions on how we got to this point, though, that Donald Trump, that the Republican Party was so inept or disorganized or whatever that they allowed this to happen. Because he should not have been the candidate.
I'm going to send you a clip from the circus. It happens at minute 43 in the final night when they did their last – I think they did one the next week to kind mm-hmm. of do a recap. But this was on election night. And Heilman and Halperin go over to the Javits Center, and slowly it dawns on them. And I knew that the bellwether was Pennsylvania. Oh, that was the other thing, Bill. I'm looking at the Senate races in Wisconsin, and I'm looking at the Senate race in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And they're telling me Hillary's up 14 in Pennsylvania, and wait a minute, Pat Toomey's down one.
But what I want to talk about is how Trump was even allowed.
I digress too much. But Heilemann, there's about a 40-second soliloquy by John Heilemann where he sums that election up better than anybody has before or since.
About how he got to
that. About the hostile takeover, because he said for the last 25 years, if we took a break, I could maybe find it on my phone. But for the last 25 years, about half this country we've all been doing fine while their lives have sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the shit's going to come down on us because we didn't know that. And he says, as a result, Donald Trump was able to engineer a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. He said Bernie Sanders came really close to engineering hostile takeover of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and the average voter out there, and I can't quote him, but it is a priceless quote. He says, so the average voter says, we don't trust this guy. What did he say? It wasn't trust. We're not sure about this guy. But what we do know is doing the same thing over and over again that we've done for the last 25 years isn't going to work. So he said they took a stick of dynamite and rolled it into Washington, yeah, D.C., and blow the fucker up.
I think this is a good – so you think back on that, the Republican primary campaigns, and you think back on all of those guys, Jeb Bush particularly, all those other Rubio, all those other people who were in there. Every single one of those guys came across as a typical Republican. Every
one of them. Every one of them.
And that's why that's people.
And
well,
people
no,
were
that's,
ready for it. They're
that's,
sick
that's
of
right.
it. You will never. Have you ever heard me defend George W. Bush?
No, I don't think so.
I never have.
No.
My opinion, and this will get a little hackle from the half dozen people who are listening to this. I hope it's more than that, but
it's a few more
for your sake.
It'll be.
In my opinion, we've just had the worst two back to back presidents in American history, George W. Bush and Barack Obama.
I don't know as I'd agree with that completely.
I'm sure you wouldn't, but let me finish. Mm-hmm. After Obama won, and then in 2010, remember that. That game-changer election in 2010, mm-hmm. the Tea Party. I said, we are now – both parties have screwed this country so bad. And I play on the Republican – the way I always say it is I'm a Republican because on most days they are slightly less heinous than the Democrats.
Slightly.
Okay? That is my true belief. Mm-hmm. Because you can't categorize my politics.
No, you can't. I mean, I would say I could categorize it. You're a fiscally conservative Republican, but I would say on social issues you tend
somewhat
to be
libertarian.
Be pretty liberal or libertarian.
Yeah.
But let me say this just about George W. Bush. Interesting to me, and we see this happen. Don't you think he's become more presidential since he's not the president?
Well, they all do.
Isn't that weird?
It's Mitt Romney started doing, like, all these people, when they kind of get out of politics, a lot of times they don't have the pressure to play by their political, line, right?
You very well remember the 1996 election and our work on the Van Oker Group.
Yeah.
Bob Dole, one of the most engaging, charming, funny people in Washington, D.C. history.
And just came across so dour and
mean.
And
you know what? I found out a friend of mine was very close to Bob Bennett. Bob Bennett was very close to Bob Dole. And Bennett said it's because Bob Dole has this image of who the president should be,
mm-hmm.
and how the president comports himself. And all his charm and his humor and his irreverence was not appropriate for that mental image that he mm-hmm. had.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen this so many times in politics. People have this mental image of what a yeah. congressman's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and Trump goes, and to his own detriment and probably to excess, he breaks that mold.
Mm-hmm.
But people were ready for it. Because in 2010, I said, we are now screwed as a country. And both parties have done it. And the real problems we face are completely intransigent, and we can't solve them. We will therefore go into a series of 2 and 4 year change cycles. Where people will be mad, and the guys who are in, they'll throw out, and the guys who are out, they'll put in.
So I think you're right. That'll happen. But you have said, as you say, and I think it's true, Donald Trump broke the mold of all of that, and you know that establishment that we don't want that in Washington anymore. We want this guy. But as it went along, and it's gotten worse, he demonstrated his crassness, his buffoonery, him making fun of that disabled reporter, the grab him by the list. David,
yes,
he did. There is no doubt.
You guys got to have a sense of humor.
I don't have a sense of humor about him going, oh, you know, that reporter, going, yeah.
Here's the thing about it. You don't get to decide if it's funny. The guy he made fun of was insulted. He gets to decide. But there were several other clips
where he did that same thing, and it wasn't about anybody with a disability. Well, now, if you're telling me Donald Trump's an asshole, stand in line. You think I don't know that?
But here's my question. Let me get to my question. So, and then I could shoot somebody on 48th Street, and they'd still grab him by the pussy comes out. All of that stuff. It got worse and worse and worse. The more confident he became, he'd just say anything and do anything and get away with it still. Why didn't people at some point say, whoa, we want to change things, but let's change things with someone who is smart.
You can't.
And cult has a little bit
They're
of
They're all the same, Bill. They're all the same. I'm going to take the posture of a former unemployed factory worker in Wisconsin. They're all the same. They're all the same. You're telling me Donald Trump's a crook? They're all crooks. You're telling me he's an asshole? That's fine. He's my asshole.
I remember Randy Newman has a song, and he sings about Lester Maddox. You remember Lester Maddox?
Sure. Just,
Lester Maddox may be a fool, but he's our fool.
Exactly.
But it was
a cry for help, and I hate to use the term wake up call. It was the American people saying we are mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore.
It's funny.
We were just talking about that
while you were in the other room.
It was a primal scream.
Now why do these people, this base of America that's had it with Washington establishment, they're not living well, they've lost their jobs to technology, or the coal mine is cut down,
or globalization,
and they're angry, they're frustrated, they don't know what to do, and the Republican Party continues to pass and enact policies that do not help them.
Like
this bullshit tax overhaul that they're trying to put through.
Well, no tax overhaul is going to be perfect. Yeah. And certainly there are things about this one I would change, but it does need to be done, and it's better than what we've got. The sad part is that it's not the true overhaul that they did in 86 on a bipartisan basis.
No, it's not going to – it's not
because I don't think we're capable of that anymore.
The congresswoman from California put it perfectly.
Did you see Orrin Hatch last night?
Yeah, he went off the rails, didn't
he? I'm going, go Orrin! Yeah.
So let me – this congresswoman said – questioning the head of the budget committee. He's eating, drinking his Beneful. Anyway, she says, so this new tax policy, under the tax policy we have now, if a teacher buys school supplies for his class or her class, pencils, paper, all of that kind of stuff, under our policy now, you can deduct that as a business expense. Will the teacher be able to do that with this new tax policy? No, they won't. We're phasing that out. That's going to go. All right. If a big corporation buys pencils and paper for their workers and supplies for their workers, will they be able to deduct that? Well, yes, they will.
Yeah. Well,
that sums it up. It's a bullshit tax policy, and it's based on trickle-down economics, which has been shown time and time again does not work.
See, we just have different interpretation. It works great. The problem is spending never changes. Revenues went to all-time historic highs under Ronald Reagan after the tax cut. That's just a fact. Now, did Congress? What did Congress do? Oh, good. This will give us a chance to live prudently and have a balanced budget. No. Let's spend it. Well, we got more money. Let's spend it.
But then also the people who got the tax breaks, the big corporations, they made more and more money, and that was great. They just didn't trickle it down.
Hey, buddy, if they're smart, they're going to do some serious investment in this economy. Because this is like last go, bro. Mm. This is about it. Yeah. Look, the Democratic.
Are you crying doomsday right here?
The Democratic economic platform is we're fine with the rich getting richer. We're fine with the hedge fund guys because they give us a lot of money.
Sure.
And I don't want to hear Obama's rhetoric. Look at what he did. Look at what he did for 8 years. Look what happened.
Well,
I'm not done.
Okay.
And now what we're going to do is we're going to let them get richer. We don't really care about that. We're going to tax the hell out of them, and we're going to give everybody a welfare check. That's the Democratic economic platform.
No, I don't.
And to me, there's just all kinds of problems with that.
I disagree.
And so Trump, at least, I do understand Trump's nationalistic economic argument. I do. My degree's in economics. I understand neoclassical economics. I understand the arguments, the intellectual arguments for free trade. Mm-hmm. If I'm a mobile home manufacturer in Indiana, I don't give a shit. All I know is my job went to Mexico. And so this goes really deep. At least Trump's making an effort. And that's what these people say about him. The corporate tax thing, Bill, the other problem with the Democratic Party is business has become evil. Believe this.
Yeah. I do. Now, let me say this about Trump. As
you ever get a job from a poor person?
Oh, geez, Dave.
That
was a nasty thing to say.
Did you?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. But let me say this. You say at least Trump is making an effort. He's making hollow promises that have no meaning. When he says, let's bring back, he's going to bring back coal and put the miners back to work.
Unemployment is at a 17-year low.
It's done.
Latino unemployment is at a two-decade low.
It's done. Coal is done, is it not?
Oh, coal's gone because of the market.
Coal is gone because it is not the fuel of the future.
Coal's not gone. It's being burnt by the bushel over in China.
It's not going to be for long. They're getting rid of it.
They're building a new plant every week.
No, they're getting rid of it. They're getting rid of it.
you are so wrong. I mean, completely wrong.
But I'll look into it. But they have looked around. The Chinese have looked around and said, well, we've done very well economically here. We're doing extremely well. But the cost has been this horrible pollution, which is mostly caused by coal-fired plants. And they're dealing with that.
That in the cities, I imagine they are probably trying to do something about it. But you have to understand the growth. I don't think we can even comprehend the growth of China.
Let me talk to that's what I've heard. People who've been there.
200 cities of over a million that weren't there 10 years ago.
This is an interesting thing. I talked to a guy who you probably know, but I won't mention his name. And his son was been studying in China. And he went there to visit his son. And he came back and said, holy mackerel. This is the future. China is is the future. It is amazing what they do. Technology is so advanced there, and he said people are living a pretty good lives for the first time in a long time.
What is China's? Are they socialist? What is their
communist?
They're kind of a hybrid communism with benefits, I guess.
Maybe, right? Because it's not like isn't true communism kind of just. No. Everybody is on a.
No, they've legalized some capitalism and they've allowed the market
free,
to
flourish. A little bit of free trade, and it's worked well for them. But the elite, Deng Xiaoping, is that who is the
Xi?
Yeah, he is he's a traditional strongman guy, and he's consolidating his power. And he's going to be, he's the supreme ruler and what he says goes and don't mess with him.
Well, and you have to understand, I think, and I don't, by the way, I'm not claiming any expertise, but I have to, our friend Rich McKeon was the lead on a lot of the negotiations back when they were at HHS on the food safety. Remember when that was all going on? Fish, farm-grown fish stuff like that. And we were saying, you got to adhere to our standards, and he was the lead on a lot of those negotiations. You'd have 100 people in a room, and the observation that he had outside those conferences was the leadership in China is scared to death. They have a tiger by the tail, and they've got a population where some people are doing quite well, and if they don't get everybody else somewhat to some level of par, they understand that they're in big trouble, and they value order over freedom. They just do.
Yeah.
And cohesiveness.
And that's for centuries.
Yeah. This is in the culture. This isn't anything new or due to the politics. It's more of a cultural mindset. And so it's a very interesting problem, what China's doing.
Can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
Just something I think about a lot that I don't have. I mean, so we see European countries have been trending towards socialist stuff, Bernie Sanders stuff.
Sure.
Right? Medical care stuff, all that stuff. And we see then there's this push in America that seems to be people rejecting that and wanting it, right? You have Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't just looking at...
And sometimes within the same person, by
right.
the way.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So wouldn't just kind of looking at this chessboard and or looking at this field and like everybody else is gravitating one way in terms of other... countries like ours, European countries, wouldn't it be reasonable that
logical.
Just standing back that we are going to follow that trend? Or what do you think is different about
America? I hope
America?
Not, but I'll be gone. I mean, this is, you know, it's interesting. My sister's my sister's 10 years older than I am. She's conservative. And this was one of the things during the race, and I'll try not to digress too far. But here's my lovely LDS retired school teacher sister in Lehigh. And I love her dearly. And she's conservative. She's a Republican. And she was viciously pro-Trump. And after that tape came out that you just mentioned, the Access Hollywood.
Grab him by the pussy.
I called her and I said, so what are you thinking? And she said, David, he is not a hypocrite. And the rest of those guys are. And now look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. She said he's never claimed to be something he's not. And she was absolutely as ferociously pro-Trump after that tape as she was before. Now, my wife was a different story. She was very offended by that. It was very troubling to her. So it affected different people different ways. Now, where were we?
We were talking about America following
socialism.
Europe. Oh, on the socialism.
Reuben, I think.
My sister says, you know what? This is not going to be my country. I'm going to be gone. These kids, the millennials, they're going to have to decide how they want to live.
Yeah.
And it's up to them. And it's I'm not going to be here to, you know. So these things play out over longer time. Here's the interesting thing that I've been thinking about lately. French Revolution, do you remember what the motto was?
Let them
fraternité,
eat cake.
Oh. Egalité, liberté, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Okay, so liberty and equality. Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought of the fact that those two things,
liberty and equality,
work in opposition to one another? You cannot have equality and have a completely free society.
No, you can't.
You cannot have a completely free society and have equality.
But you think of them as being
in the same bucket, and they're not.
But you're thinking of them as just these broad absolutes in that case. You know, liberty doesn't mean that you can just do anything you want.
No, of course not. But it does mean free market. It does mean I'm free to prosper. I'm free to express myself. And right now, I would say the tension between the two major parties are several, but one is the drive towards equality versus the drive to retain liberty. And you can't have – the two can't coexist completely at full levels.
Well, and that's good.
That's interesting.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
We're
getting close to
– And my value is freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, just let me say one thing about socialized medicine and Barack Obama. You know, you think he was such an awful president. I would agree with you in that he was somehow not able to, I don't know why, but not able to do the things that he really wanted to do. He was he was unsuccessful in implementing policies that he thought were important.
Yeah.
I mean, with the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, that was such a screwed up compromise.
It's the worst of every
but he
world.
But he kept trying to get, he wanted it to be more of a Medicare situation. And he was, I think he was pushing towards single payer health care, which I'm for, but that's another argument. But he couldn't do it. He couldn't get it through. And I don't know if it was the force of, you know, he just didn't have the right people working for him or whatever. But I think it was Rubin, I forget his first name. I heard him speaking one time after the Obama was out, and he said, it'll happen. It's inevitable. We will one day in this country have single-payer health care. But now I want to ask you what, because we're going to have to wrap up, on the big picture level, what is going to happen? Can you see into the future a little bit? I mean, I have the feeling that the Republican Party has just about had it.
Oh, so have the Democrats. Don't say that in a partisan way.
But so then what will happen?
I mean,
I think maybe you're right. Is there somebody out there in the Democratic Party you can see that could be
not.
A leader? I don't see anybody.
Absolutely not. Whenever somebody says Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, I go, the future of the Democratic Party.
No, I don't think so.
You know, I will say the Republicans have a deeper bench and they have a whole lot more state legislatures and governors, at least right now.
Somebody who could come out that we don't really recognize right now.
I think there's a talent pool out there. But I will tell you this. I was talking about this with a very well-informed friend of mine the other day. We're not in 1862, but we might be well in 1857, 1858.
Yeah, I've heard this said.
That we are really at that point.
There might be we're kind of dividing into our own little camps, and there could
be. And I wish to hell people would kind of back off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's just really sad. I mean, I still think the majority of America is a right of center country, probably more liberal, more forgiving on social issues, probably more fiscally conservative. But even then, we're hypocritical. And I'll say we, because we all want our better. I always say, and I've said this to Jason Chaffetz, I've said it to others who are in power. You do know we're never going to fix this debt thing, don't you?
Yeah,
it will take a collapse. I mean, we're not ever going to fix it. And the greatest moment in 2010 was at a town meeting, and there's some Republican congressman getting screamed at, and there's this 70-year-old Vietnam vet with his VFW hat on and his buttons, and I mean, the veins bulging out on his neck, and he says, "Keep your government hands off my Medicare."
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I mean,
there you go.
Yeah.
And I don't.
I you know what
with
I think
all due it, respect to that guy, that sums it up.
It does. Yeah. And you know what I think it's going to take, and this sounds kind of real idealistic of me, but I think it may happen that it's going to take a leader to come along, some person that we don't know about yet, who will be a uniting force in this country.
I wish I could share your view. I hope you're right.
I mean, I think it has to happen, or we're screwed.
I think we'll find alien life that will unite us first.
There has to be.
It's not a joke.
There's got to be somebody out there who is dynamic and personable, like Barack Obama was, you have to admit.
Oh, absolutely.
Very dynamic, very personable, and has the skill to unite people and to. I think that's what it takes.
I'll tell you what, if Trump had those qualities, y'all would be in trouble, because the interesting dichotomy is if you tested Obama's policies, they were never in very high favor. When you tested Obama, people liked him.
Mm-hmm.
Now you test Trump, they don't like him. But if you test his policies, they test very well. So if those two things ever come together, you know, it'll still be
you know
right
who it
center
is?
Country.
Who?
Oprah. Going to be Oprah.
Hearing people say Oprah.
I think we're just going to have movie stars as presidents from now on. So I'm going to count from 3, 2, 1, and then I just want us each to say how many more years Trump will be in office. Prediction.
I would say at
the same time. 3, 2, 1.
Seven.
He'll be out by August.
Nope. 7 more years.
You know, Bill, I'm not normally a betting man, but
I think he'll be out by August.
I already will win $100 December 31st.
He will be out by August, and here's what's going to happen. Robert Mueller's investigation will get tighter and tighter. It'll start focusing on members of his family, and Mr. Trump will say, "For to protect my family,
On what, though? On what charges?
I'm being...
Collusion?
There is no charge of collusion. There's no such thing. There isn't a statute. There isn't any federal law. There's nothing called
treason.
Collusion.
Well,
they'll find
even close to treason.
I'm telling you, he will resign.
But it'll be so PR for him. It won't even need to be real action.
I have to resign.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to resign. They're forcing me out. I have to protect my family.
I'll tell you what, Bill, that moves us to 1860.
It may, but that's...
Anybody who thinks you could just force Trump out and there's not going to be an opposite reaction.
It would be
they
ugly.
Have, I've said this to several people. What do they think is going to
happen?
Well,
here's what would happen. That dynamo, Mike Pence, would step up with his wife, mother.
He's a decent man.
I suppose. All right, Dave Owen, I really love talking to you. It's because we can argue and disagree.
I'm so sad that that's being lost, Bill.
Yeah.
I'm so sad that that's being lost.
Yeah, I know. We used to do it a lot more. We can, but
not very many people can.
Oh, you mean just be able to have this kind of argument and still like each other?
I do not hate you because of your political beliefs. Yeah.
He has other reasons that he hates you.
Well, no,
and
no.
We're going to go into the
greatest line ever on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David's line at a movie, and he says something about Jews, and this guy turns to him and he says, "You're just another self-hating Jew." And Larry David just brings himself up to his full height, and he says, "Listen, buddy, I may hate myself, but it has nothing to do with being a Jew."
Maybe the best line ever. Oh, it's even good this season.
Our guest, Dave Owen, political consultant, and you can, you know, if would you advise anybody to get into that job? And if you want them,
oh, it's so funny. People ask me, "Well, how'd you do that?" And I just go, "I have no idea," and I did it.
I mean, people sometimes might want to do it, study economics, study political science.
Oh yeah.
If you're younger,
get involved. I mean, I've always said that. You've heard me say that for years, and I say it to either side. You know, anybody. I've told my kids. I mean, oh, by the way, my son is now the editor of the news desk at the New York Times.
That's great. You know, I probably look at his work every day.
Yep.
Probably.
And I've always said to my kids, go get involved. They need people.
You mean the failing fake news New York Times?
I tell him, son, you're at the pinnacle of fake news. And I said, and it's extraordinarily well written.
It's interesting that the New York Times, with all of that, has had a real resurgence because of Donald Trump saying that stuff.
No publicity is bad publicity.
No, I regret that we haven't gotten to some things that I would love to have talked about, but thank you.
We'll have you back.
We'll do it again.
We'll do it again.
We can have Owen. Dave Owen, our guest. Owen Communications is his business. If you want to look it up and get him to politically consult for you, you can do that.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah. And, I think that's it. Thank you, Dylan, for producing the show.
Uh-huh.
I'm Bill Allred. That's the Let's Go Eat show. And remember, if you're pouring drinks, always make mine a double.
Broadway Media Podcast Network.